Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, October 4th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for probably the next hour and 15 minutes or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for our hump day edition of the show. Two guests join us today. The first, Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. The second, Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one. We'll chat college football and NFL with both of those guys. Of course, today is the start of the NHL season. We've got great content over at bangthebook.com from Parker Michaels, who's written up a morning line report for us, along with all the other preseason content that he's done, over 2,500 words on today's four games. So lots of stuff, in-depth analysis there with that. One of the four games tonight qualifying as a play for him. So head on over to bangthebook.com and give that a look. Also over there, college football power ratings. College football and NFL opening line reports. We'll have plenty of super contest coverage as we go throughout the week as well. 4-1 for me last week, up to 500 on the season. So hopefully we can keep that ball rolling in a positive direction here. But the recap article is up over at bangthebook.com. Lots of game previews for the NFL, college football. I've got a series preview up for Boston and Houston in the ALDS. Rest of them coming here today and tomorrow. Of course, with the NL not starting until Friday, I'll probably focus on the AL today. Get the NL ones up tomorrow. But lots of good content over there at bangthebook.com, as well as our sportsbook reviews. Don't forget to check those out. See which sportsbook will work best for you. Of course, as we talk about here all the time on the show, DSI Sportsbook, good friends of ours over there, good promo code offer for our Bang the Book radio listeners and bangthebook.com readers. If you sign up using that BTB and the number 25 promo code, a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. Again, that promo code BTB and the number 25. Go ahead and bring on today's first guest. That is Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, sir?
Trying to get by and get back to normal. It's surely different here in Las Vegas this week.
Yeah, most definitely is. And, of course, we had a pre-recorded show on Tuesday, a couple of guests on Monday. None of the three guests that we've had here so far this week, Vegas locals, and you and I were talking before the show here. I mean, this is ultimately a national tragedy because a lot of people go out to Vegas, take vacations there, go to have fun. A lot of people that go to this festival year after year after year, and, you know, a lot of the people that lost their lives from, you know, that psychopath shooting down at them, people that weren't even Vegas residents, but I'm sure that the mood is still very somber out there.
Yeah, it definitely is. They've still got the area closed off where the shooting was, so it's tough to get around. Talked to a few guys that have actually been into Mandalay Bay. He says it's a ghost town in there. Nobody's in there. The sports book only had like one guy in it yesterday, and it's going to take a while. It's, you know, the thing about Las Vegas is there's rarely people who were born in Nevada that are here. Most of them came from out of town, and like myself from Cleveland, and just about everybody I know out here, I've only met, I think, one person who was actually born in Nevada. And it's different this week. We had our Tuesday meeting. We thought about calling it off. And I said, well, we have people from out of town that, you know, that come in. And but we only had five guys show up. Normally we've had anywhere from, you know, 12 to 20. So a lot of people out there doing what they can, giving blood, buying food for the hospitals. And I just wanted to come out and anybody out there, my brother-in-law is a policeman, and he actually had one of his friends who was killed in the shooting, an undercover policeman. I just wanted to thank everybody, the people out here, the hospitals, the emergency people, the police, the firemen did a fantastic job, and I know they never get enough credit. So if you're in any of those fields around the country, just keep in mind that people love you, people respect you, you do something that a lot of us can't do. And you know what I do is thing, I mean, it's ridiculous. We have a gambling show here. None of this has the importance of what these people do, and I just want, my heart goes out to them, and they're fully respected. And a lot of times, especially cops, a lot of times people give them a lot of hard time, but when you need help, they're there. And regardless of where you live, support your local police and firemen and emergency crews and the hospitals. They're miracle workers.
No, I completely agree with that, and I have some very good friends that are police and fire and EMS, and I can certainly echo those sentiments as well. And one last note I'll make about this here, and then we'll do what we try to do best here and use sports as a distraction for what's going on in the real world. But the biggest thing that I started thinking about, right after this whole event happened is just, I can't believe that this is the world that we live in. And, it's sad that you can go out and try to have fun at a movie theater or at a concert or something like that, and possibly lose your life in this fashion. Now, that being said, and I know it's hard to look for silver linings because all of this is still so fresh and the wounds are still, so deep for a lot of people, is that you read these stories of people that were strangers before that day. And then, staying by each other's side, strangers helping each other out. And it kind of gives you a little bit of hope that, there is still some level of humanity out there with the way that people, come together and support each other. People that they don't even know, in these chaotic situations. And, at least there's that. I mean, you always run into these stories where somebody tragically passes away and it's awful and it's horrible, and condolences to the families of the victims. And then you have these people that, are just random Joes that just happen to meet, the victim and stay with them. And, I'm sure people have read some of those stories already that are out there. And it just kind of gives you a little bit of a glimmer of hope at the end of the day.
Yeah, I was pretty down after it happened. And I actually was texted with my cousin, and he basically said, because I told him, I said, what has happened to this country? I said, this isn't the United States that I grew up in. And I said, I just can't believe these things happen. And he says, well, keep in mind, for the one person who did something, there's thousands of people that were out there giving blood and helping people. And, everybody at the shooting were all helping strangers. And he says, there's a lot more good people in this country than there are bad people. It's just a shame that we have the bad people. And if somebody wants to kill ourselves, it's bad enough as it is, but don't take other people with you. Just if you got to that point and you're determined you're going to take your own life, please don't get the police involved. Don't harm anybody else. If you've got to do it, get it over with, and you'll be thought of in a lot better light than you would be if you go out like this and kill all these people. It's just you don't need to do that. They didn't do anything to this guy.
No, they certainly didn't. And obviously it's going to take a long time to heal. And I know that for me personally, trips to Las Vegas will never be the same. And for a lot of people, they'll never be the same. I mean, at least I still have my life, and that's obviously a good thing. But it's a spot that a lot of people go for a lot of different reasons to kind of escape the real world, to go out there and have some fun. And, to have a place like that tarnished for a lot of people, time will heal all wounds, I'm sure, as people like to say. And for some people, time won't be enough, obviously, if they lost loved ones here or, were critically injured, maybe paralyzed, something like that. Obviously there's a lot of healing left to be done there, but I don't know. But in any event, I guess we'll sort of transition over to the stuff that we generally talk about here on today's show. And, like I said, I mean, sports kind of being used as a distraction in a lot of different ways, and we'll try to do that here with today's show as well. Got a few listener questions for you here, Brian. The first one is, as lines get tighter, I mean, now we're into week 6 of the college football season, week 5 of the NFL season. We would expect that the markets do get significantly more efficient as we go along here. But a listener question from Matt Brash Lindberg asking, should I bet fewer games for larger amounts as the lines get tighter?
Actually, the research that I have found says there's no correlation to lines getting tighter as the season goes on. If you're making your own lines, you may think that you don't have the bigger advantages than you do earlier in the season. But a lot of that is small sample sizes, and once you get to and you talked about this, I believe, with the power ratings, you feel good when they're getting closer, and so that's what it is. But I would say, if you've got lesser plays to bet and you want to play them bigger, I wouldn't. If the play is no better now than what it was before, I play basically half units, maybe 1.5 units. I'll play bigger if I'm trying to middle something or if I know where the line's going to go and I'm trying to get ahead. But I wouldn't do it. I don't go into a weekend saying I want to put 20% of my bankroll in action. If the plays aren't there, the plays aren't there. Some weeks I will have, 40 football plays, first halves, second halves, live betting, full game, that kind of thing. Others I may have 15. So I just, if it's a good play, my numbers say it's a good play, then I bet it. But I don't bet any more just because I have lesser plays.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, bankroll management still very, very important. And if the lines are tighter, then it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to bet more money than you normally would, because your edge is probably going to be smaller. If you feel like the market is tighter, then in theory, your edge is smaller no matter what. So, I certainly wouldn't recommend going any larger there in terms of the unit size. Had a question from at Mike Metley on Twitter asking about buying points and if it's ever recommended. And I know that there are a lot of different schools of thought with this, Brian, so I'm curious to get your thoughts on buying points.
For the most part, the only number I'm looking to buy is a 3 in the NFL, and I want to lay 10 cents. And since nobody lets you buy on or off a 3 at 10 cents, it's really a moot point. But in fact, now that there's more teams doing the two-point conversion, as opposed to the regular extra point, it even has less value. I've got one of my guys that I bet with says there are no numbers that are worth buying onto for 10 cents. And I have found, and I can't prove this at all, but let's say I'm looking to take 10 with an underdog and the line is sitting at 9.5 all week. Do I buy up to 10? Or if it's 6.5, do I buy to 7? Or if it's 2.5, do I buy to 3? And any time in my life, and I don't buy onto the 7 or the 10 anymore, but any time I've done that, that it never mattered because you had the right side anyway. So if a couple guys I know really follow where the line is sitting, and they'll say, why did they open up this game at 7.5? Why didn't they open it up at 7? And I said, well, he's trying to take a bet, one or two bets on, like, say, 7.5. He wants a little bit of dog money, but just enough. Chris Sanders has even talked about when he sets the lines over at South Point, they give him the opportunity to set it up where he can take one or two max bets, and then that's it. They have to go with where the market goes after that. So just because it's set there doesn't mean you have to play it. And there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of guys who'll say, well, why is this sit at 6.5 instead of 7? Well, if it's sit there, if you've got a game and you're laying 6.5, they're basically all the money's coming in at 6.5. Nobody's taking 6.5 because they're waiting for 7. So a lot of times you'll look at money coming in on games and you'll say, well, everybody likes this side. Well, no, they like that number. They don't particularly like that side. The wise guys are not on that game because of the side. They're looking for a number. And, you give me a 2.5-point favorite in the NFL and a 3.5-point favorite in the NFL, I may have opposing views on that game based on the importance of those numbers of 2.5 and 3.5, whether you're laying or taking. So I don't buy points. I find other ways to play it. You can either, tease, which is getting harder to do out here in Vegas. They're charging much more now, or you could play something on the money line. But I'm not big on buying points unless it's the 3. And like I say, you can't get it for 10 cents. So what's the point of even trying to do it?
Right. And the response that I had to the listener, because I figured it was kind of a time sensitive question with regards to Monday Night Football here this past Monday night, is, if you've got multiple sports books to shop around at, that's going to be your best bet. Rather than paying that extra, you know, 15 or 20 cents a juice or whatever a specific book charges you to get off of that key number or buy onto that key number, you could probably find, you know, that key number at minus 115 or even maybe minus 110, depending on what side it is and what book you're looking at. So that's the most important thing, I think, is, you know, rather than looking to buy points, just spread your bankroll out at a few different outlets. You know, have a sharper book, have a more balanced book, like, you know, one of the, like maybe a Five Dimes or a Bookmaker or something like that, and then have a more public book like a Bovada so that you do have that opportunity. One of those three books is probably going to have the number you want at some point. It's just a matter of being able to get it when it's there.
Yeah, and one of the tips I can give listeners is if you watch the lines at the real sharp books, and I consider the real sharp books being Pinnacle and Crisp. For example, coming into Monday night, the line was 7 just about everywhere. All of a sudden, a couple hours before the game, it starts leaking down where it looks like 6.5 is the prevailing number. I think I might have even seen a 6 with varying juice over a Pinnacle. If they are playing those, you know, there's a lot of big money coming in on those kind of games. It's Monday Night Football. It's a key number of 7. It's usually, you know, I've been told by bookmakers that the late move is the right move. So if you don't have an opinion on that game, and you just want to have some action, I know there's a lot of guys out there that don't bet for a living, follow the sharp books, follow where that money's going late in the game. One of the things I do is Friday night, I write down from let's say from Chris, I will write down every single line that they have gotten and then compare that to how the line moves on game day. I do that for Sunday morning for the NFL or Saturday night. I'll write down the lines and then I can look and say, okay, the big money's coming in now. The game has gone from 7 to 6.5 with favorable juice. The big money is coming in on the dog here. There's plenty of 7s left out here in Las Vegas. Even if I don't have a play in the game, I will take where the smart money is going because they've got a lot more information than I do, and I will take the 7 points. And it was the same thing with the under on Monday Night Football. I played the first half under, but the full game took money on the under also. And for virtually all but 10 seconds of the game, less than that even, the right side on the game was Washington and the under, and then they had the free play at the end. And those things happen. That's part of sports gambling. It hurts when it happens, but it's happened to all of us. But that's one of the things that I do to supplement my income because I'm pretty selective. Like I said, I don't give turn the plays out to clients. And there's certain weeks where I only make 15 bets, and that includes, you know, halftime, first halves, live betting, and everything. So anytime I can add to my portfolio, I do it that way. And that's strictly about an hour before game time at the real sharp books.
Had one more listener question to touch on here this week. This one from at Mikey DFS86 on Twitter, who's a regular listener of the show, and I always want to give him props and thanks for that. And his question here is, do people play both sides of teasers to possibly middle? He said he was looking at Monday Night Football, said Kansas City pick and over 41, then also played Washington plus 13.5 and under 55. So is that a thing that people do?
Oh, they do it. You shouldn't do it. Number one, there's no numbers on totals that are worth teasing through. The only numbers you want to tease through are the key numbers of 3, 4, 6, and 7. Basically 3 and 7 are the ones that are most important. But I had this conversation with Fezzik one time when I just come to town, and we were at one of our Tuesday meetings. And I mentioned to him, I said, when there's a low total game where points are at a premium, should you total or should you tease both sides in the same game? And he said, well, there's really not a problem teasing both sides, but you don't want to do them in the same game. You could take if the lines, you know, you said side A on one teaser or side B on the other, but he said if you tease them in the same game, there's a very good chance you're going to lose one of those teasers or one of those sides isn't going to hit, and then you lose your teaser. He says it's better off teasing different games, but it's not usually not a good point because you can't tease through the good numbers. So the only time I'm really looking to tease is when you've got an 8 or a 1, so something in that range. In the long run, you'll lose money doing it. I wouldn't do it. And especially don't tease college football at all. I know Cheetah does a little bit when it's really low total games, like a 40 or a 41. He finds value in it, but overall, you shouldn't tease college football. Guys out here will tell you they'll take any bet on teasing college football, and you can bet whatever you want. So that tells me that I don't want to be doing it. But in the NFL, you're only looking to tease through the 3 and the 7.
Now, I know that correlated parlays will get you some negative attention at sportsbooks that do still allow them. I know some of them have just pretty much blocked them off altogether and don't allow that to be done. Is teasing, you know, like, for example, here from Monday Night Football, Kansas City at a pick and over 41, then the other teaser, Washington plus 13.5, under 55. Is that something that's going to draw you some negative attention from the sportsbook?
I've never worked in a sportsbook, so I'm not sure. I don't know. They probably won't take it. And they'll probably be flagged. You know, once it comes up, it'll be like, especially if you use a card and they know who you are, it'll bring attention to yourself. I wouldn't want to do that. If you are looking to play something, let's say you got two games you like. You like the under in one game, and you like the dog. You like the favorite in another game, and you like the over. Use favorite in one game, and you know, switch them up. Use the favorite in one game, and the under in the other one, or whatever. I don't know, but yeah, you don't want to do anything to cause attention to yourself. I know guys that will strictly bet $400 on a game. And that way it doesn't need approval. And in most of the bigger places, and they just go their entire lives. Nobody knows who they are. But there's other guys that will make a mistake, and they'll go in and they'll start cashing tickets and $10,000 at a time, and all of a sudden the IRS gets involved. And it's a learning process. If you come out to Vegas, you know, your first few times, you want to be treated as a high roller, and you want to be treated with respect and get your comps and everything. But a lot of guys anymore, if they don't need to give you a card, a betting card or whatever, they don't care about the comps because they're afraid that they'll be limited in the long run. Different ways to look at it.
All right, let's look at some games here that are coming up this weekend. We had a listener question about Eastern Michigan and Toledo. Nobody better to ask about that game than Brian, who is an expert in the Mid-American Conference. Toledo's a 13.5 point favorite right now. It's game 317, 318 on your rotation number. Total up there at 60.5. What are your thoughts on this game, Brian?
I made this 12.5, so I'm not going to be involved. A lot of people are talking about the Eastern Michigan situation last week against Kentucky. They actually looked pretty good against Kentucky. But keep in mind, that was definitely a look-ahead situation for Kentucky coming off of the way they lost that game. Definitely a letdown situation. Although, to Eastern Michigan's credit, they lost in overtime. And usually teams that lose in overtime are not a good bet the following week. But they came out and they played Kentucky pretty well. But I just think it was a Kentucky that looked past them a little bit. But, you know, Toledo's the best team. I say you think because I came into the season firmly believing that Toledo's the best team in the MAC. And, you know, they played Nevada, and they played Tulsa, and they played Miami. Well, the first half against Miami, I was convinced Toledo was the best team. And then it completely fell apart in the second half. And then I started looking at the overall first half numbers. They allowed 9 yards per play to Miami, even though they were winning 16-10. So they lost sacks in the first half by 2. So they were very fortunate to have that lead. And then the second half, Miami just came out and whipped them. But, you know, looking back, Toledo against Nevada, they only win that game by 13. They did cover the spread, but Nevada's done nothing since. Nevada has had injuries that have had some effect on that. But and then they play Tulsa, and you know, they don't cover that game, 54-51. So neither one of those teams are off to a good start. So we'll have to see something out of Toledo this week, or maybe this whole MAC is up for grabs. Eastern Michigan's actually played a little bit better. They've they've covered three out of the four games. The only one they didn't cover was that overtime against Ohio, and so they've played a little bit better ball. But this is the second of three straight road games for Eastern Michigan, and from a history standpoint, the last 4 years, Toledo's just crushed Eastern Michigan. Eastern's getting better. We'll have to see. If Toledo doesn't have a good week this week, we may be able to make some money betting against them the rest of the season.
All right, so you got a spot here with Toledo coming off of a bye. Eastern Michigan, as you mentioned, back on the road here again, although it's not the longest trip from Ypsilanti down to Toledo, but it is still a road game for them. They're not off of a bye. What is that situation worth to you in terms of putting together a spread for this game? How much do you value a team coming off of a bye against a team that's just, you know, playing in a consecutive week?
Well, it's what they did before they came off the bye, and the last thing Toledo remembers is getting their butt kicked by Miami. So I would think it's been a spirited 2 weeks worth of practice here for Toledo. So I may give them an extra point and a half based on that, which would put it maybe 14. But once again, it's not a lot of, it's not a big enough difference in my number for me to get involved.
One other point I want to make about this game, you mentioned Eastern Michigan playing the second of three straight road games. Eastern Michigan's home games this year, September 1st, September 23rd, October 21st, November 2nd, November 21st. So they're spending a ton of time on the road. 6 of 9 on the road from September 30th to November 21st. And, of course, as we get deeper into the MAC season, you get all those weeknight games. So they play Thursday, Thursday, Wednesday, Wednesday, Tuesday. So you got some short rest, short prep time games in there as well. Eastern Michigan may be a team to watch from a situational standpoint going forward here because of the challenging schedule that they've got. Also had another listener question about a game, and we'll slide on down the board here to this one between Washington State and Oregon, game 377, 378. We've seen some interesting line movement in this game because we don't really know what's going on for Oregon at the quarterback position. It seems like Taylor Ali is going to be able to play here for this one. Maybe Braxton Burmeister, they took his red shirt off last week, had to burn that because the backup got hurt and Justin Herbert's out with a broken collarbone. Washington State, huge win for them over USC last week. So this is kind of a line that's drawn a lot of attention. It's sort of hovered around one pick, two, somewhere in there. Looks like now Washington State, the preferred side at a lot of books, is a 2.5-point favorite.
I'm kind of looking the other way in this one. From a spots perspective, you've got Washington State. They played five games, all at home, including their game against Montana State. Coming off the biggest win, home win, in probably history of the Cougars, beating USC on a Friday night national television. Next week, they are at California, also a Friday night national television. The week after that, they got their homecoming against Colorado. So Washington State, definitely you could see them having a letdown here. Oregon, I don't think, has any type of letdown because, as you pointed out, the starting quarterback's out. And the second-string quarterback, they're not sure he's going to how much action he's going to get. From a spot standpoint, it's all Oregon here. Oregon does have Stanford on deck, and they struggled against Stanford at certain parts last year. They're going to have revenge against Stanford. They lost to Stanford last year, but from years prior, the speed of Oregon really worked well against Stanford, but they do have Stanford and UCLA on deck. But Oregon impressed me against Cal. Cal is one of those teams that when you take a look at the explosive plays, they don't give up explosive plays, and they didn't even give up explosive plays to Oregon. But the offense didn't come out and play well, and for Oregon to win that game really impressed me. That's probably the most impressive win on the season because against Nebraska, they crushed them first half and then fell asleep in the second half. Wyoming, when they played them, they weren't very good. Arizona State's not the greatest of team. They did lose that game, but if that game goes a little bit farther, they don't turn that ball over. It's a different story. That was a coin flip game at the end, but I like the Ducks team. I like the spot here going against Washington State. I don't know what kind of drop-off we're going to see at quarterback here for Oregon, but I just think that Oregon's the better team overall, and the spot here for Washington State is pretty bad.
Well, and I think, too, that as we go along with Oregon, and of course it depends on their injury situation on offense, but with the hire of Jim Leavitt, this is a team that defensively should get progressively better as the season goes along. I mean, we didn't really see it against Arizona State. Played pretty well last week against Cal, like you mentioned. Washington State is a very unique animal with the Mike Leach air raid. They're going to throw the ball 60 to 70 times in this game. Then you've got a power team in Stanford. Then you've got a team that can't run the football in UCLA. Another power team, although Utah's a little bit different than they used to be in terms of that power running game because they're doing a little bit more with tempo, a little bit more of a dual threat quarterback thing. So this schedule for Oregon gets extremely tricky, not just with the opponents that they're playing, but with the different schemes that they're seeing week after week. So I'll be really interested to see how they do in this game and then over the next 5 weeks overall, you know, to see if maybe this is a team that we do get, you know, some pretty good numbers and pretty good reasons to back them. Last thing I'll ask you about with this game here, with all of the injury situations, Royce Freeman is questionable. Of course, Justin Herbert's not going to play. How much have you adjusted Oregon down based on these injuries?
That's the problem you run into because you really don't know how to drop them down. Let me see what my original line was here. Do you happen to know the game number on this one?
The game number on this one is 377-378.
Okay. I originally had Oregon at 2.5 in this game. So it looks to be maybe a 3 to a 4 point drop with those guys out. Maybe a little bit too much, I think. But we will have to see. A lot of times you can tell when there's a big drop off at quarterback. Oregon's got a good quarterback, but there was a fight coming into the season. So I'm not so sure it's that much of a drop-off. So obviously, the running back out, how much do you judge a running back in college football? I think most of that is more attributed to the offensive line and the play calling. So we'll have to see what happens here. But, you know, I just noticed that Oregon State does have double revenge. They lost it to Washington State last year by 18, and the year before lost a double overtime game at home. So gives you more reason to take Oregon if you like that side. The only way I would look here is at the Oregon side. There's so many spot plays that you have to take a look at and what are they worth. The Oregon State spot, you can't find much of a worse spot than that.
All right, we'll move back up the rotation board here to game 313-314. This one between Notre Dame and North Carolina. I had a listener question about this one suggesting that the line seemed to be a little bit off from the power ratings. We have seen North Carolina money in this game a little bit. Line opened 16.5 at Chris. It's down to 14 or 14.5 out there in the market. Big reason for this is because Brandon Wimbush, the quarterback for Notre Dame, on crutches going into the practice facility on Monday, or going into the practice facility on Tuesday, one of the two. It could have been both. So obviously he's not 100%. Doesn't look like he's going to be able to go this week. How much of an adjustment needs to be made to Notre Dame if that's the case?
Well, I'm more concerned about all the injuries for North Carolina. I mean, they are devastated. After that last game against Georgia Tech, they went into that game. They were really beat up. They came out of that game in worse shape than when they came in, and they couldn't do a thing against Georgia Tech if you paid any attention to that game. So we've got North Carolina second and third string players going to be starting in this game. I think that is more of a concern than Notre Dame with the starting quarterback being out. My actual power rating without the injuries is 8, and they opened this line at 17, and the money has been constantly going down on it because of the injuries. And I don't know if that's the right side. If it gets down to, you know, I think I saw it. Is it down to 10 at this point?
Right now, looking out there, it's 14 is the lowest at Pinnacle.
Okay. Well, but some guys have been talking about if it gets down to 10, but it'll never get down to that if it's 14. But at 10, you would probably look that way. It'll never happen. So this is a game that I'm not going to be involved in. But when you have so many injuries to a team in North Carolina, you've got guys that just weren't expected to play, and they've got guys taking major minutes now, younger players that weren't even expected to play. You talked about taking the redshirt off of the Oregon quarterback. It's looking pretty bad in North Carolina with all these injuries. Notre Dame's a better football team, obviously. I don't think the drop off a quarterback is that that much with Notre Dame, but this is one of the games. There's so many games on the board. You know, this is a game that I'm not – too many question marks here for me to put my money on.
But actually, as I'm looking through Twitter here, Brian Kelly saying Brandon Wimbush expected to play this weekend. So, you know, obviously stay up to date on the latest with that, and we'll see if we get – an adjustment in the line because of that. North Carolina has 13 guys already out with season-ending injuries, which is just remarkable at this point in the season. But let's flip over to the NFL here for a couple minutes. There's a game I really want to touch on with you here, game 451, 452, the Chargers and the Giants. So last week, the Chargers were in the top five consensus in both the traditional Super Contest and the Super Contest Gold. They wound up closing a little bit of a favorite there against Philadelphia. Giants were a very, very trendy dog. Public dogs, always very interesting to follow. They covered, couldn't win the game outright. But here we are this week, seeing Giants money come in here. And the Giants have not looked good this season. They've had a ton of issues. Ben McAdoo probably should give up play calling duties. But people going back to the well with the Giants here this week. They're up to a 3.5-point favorite. One shot, Bet Online already showing 4.
To me, this is a clear 3. When I was handicapping this game, obviously neither team has won a game yet. Both teams finding ways to lose. Coming into the season, I would have had them pretty much equal. I haven't seen anything to say that they're not equal. So if you could catch anything over a 3, I would look that way. The Chargers just finding ways to lose, and you know, the Giants look better the last couple of weeks. But you go back and look at the teams they played. Dallas has not been nearly as good as what we thought they were going to be. Detroit's got a decent record, but is there anybody really taking Detroit really seriously? Philadelphia's been on the edge. They've got some talent, but they haven't been overly a team that you wanted to play. And Tampa Bay's got their own problems. So, you know, you take a look at the Chargers, and they also played Philadelphia, and they lose by 2. The Giants lose by 3. But they played in Miami, and it's hard to believe now that they actually lost to Miami. Gave up 27 points to Miami. They might not have scored 27 points the rest of the year, the way that offense is gone. But they did play Kansas City and Denver, two of the better teams in the NFL. So the Chargers, even though they've got the 0-4 record just as the Giants have, they have played the two best teams out of the group. I have concerns about Dallas right now, especially with Lee out defensively. They've got some problems, and they haven't run the ball like they have in the past. So with over 3.5, I would take the points here. I think the line on this game should be 3.
Now, of course, you've got the cross-country travel situation for the Chargers. You've got the early kickoff, so maybe that's kind of factoring in a little bit here to what's going on in the betting market. But you mentioned the Dallas Cowboys, and I want to touch on that game here on today's show as well. They take on Green Bay, this number down below a field goal. It's 1.5 or 2 out there in the marketplace. Game 471, 472, one of just 3 4 o'clock kickoffs here on Sunday. Dallas has some big-time injury problems. At the same time, Green Bay, you know, they've had offensive tackles hurt all year long. They've had a bunch of problems of their own. Defensively, they've had some issues on the defensive line with injuries. In the secondary, they always have problems. Is this a complete stay-away game for you, or are you, you know, pretty committed to looking to go against Dallas?
Not really. It's probably more of a stay-away game. I haven't been overly impressed with the Packers, obviously. Seattle struggled. They beat Seattle in the first game, and Seattle's offense has struggled. They played one good half of football against Indy, one of the worst teams in the NFL. They lose at Atlanta. Cincinnati, they had to go to overtime to beat Cincinnati. And then last week against Chicago, even though the scoreboard says they win by 21, they were gifted turnovers left and right in that game. So the Packers really are not the Packers that they've been in the past. The offense just hasn't been that impressive. And a lot of it is that you got some offensive line problems, which is a problem when you go down. Most of the teams in the NFL that are not playing well, it all boils down to their offensive line. The offensive line has been disappointing, which in turn makes the quarterbacks disappointing, because if you don't have time to throw the football, you make yourselves one-dimensional, and that's happened to a lot of the teams this year. Dallas did have that breakout last week against the Rams, but the Rams have a defense where they can't stop the run, so you don't know if you can buy too much into that. The second half when they played Arizona, that one was an easy play, a second half play on Dallas in that game, because it was clear that once Arizona could not run the football, they were not going to be able to move the football on a team that can stop them from the passing game. So, you know, they get crushed by Denver 42-17. Well, they went over the Giants in the opener, not impressive against a winless team. So I have questions about both these clubs right now, and this is a game I'll sit back and watch. Like I said, there's plenty of betting opportunities. Make it involved with live betting if something comes up on it. But there's other teams on the schedule I'd rip a little money on.
Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. What's going on over there at the website right now?
Well, we're going to do videos today. We've got two crews in. Once again, doing the videos. Matt Hold is coming in town. Or is already in town. He's going to be doing videos talking MMA and that kind of, and the like of that. I'm not an MMA guy, but he's very good at it. So I always listen to what he says, and he makes me money. So we're going to be talking that. We're going to be talking, you know, eventually we'll start talking some hockey and some other things, but we may even be talking some baseball playoffs and decent start last week or yesterday. If you don't play live betting in baseball, you're doing yourself a disservice. A lot of good money opportunities to be made. Yesterday I was able to get the Yankees on the run line at plus 132, I believe, after they fell behind 1-0 on the first batter. And that worked out really well. And actually I saw them get down to 168 before two more runs were scored by Minnesota. So after the first half of an inning, you could get the Yankees, which started off as like a 250 favorite, and you could have got them at a nice plus money price. I believe it was like plus 168, something in that range. On the live betting, you know, it's, you've got a team with the Yankees who could put points on the board in no time in a ballpark that is conducive to home runs. So it worked out really well. And also depending on the strike zone of the pit of the umpires, a lot of great chances to play live betting in baseball. So everybody has it right now for the playoffs, and just take a look at it. And even if you don't have accounts, just take a look and say, well, what would I be playing here? And just mark it down. And then at the end of the day, you can go back and look and say, hey, I've done pretty well. Maybe I should look into this. So it works out very well on these nationally televised games that everybody, all the sports books are going to have live betting on.
And you can follow Brian on Twitter at @BLeonardSports. Brian Leonard, WagerTalk.com. Thank you so much for your time, and we appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again real soon.
Best of luck to everyone. Talk next week.
All right, one more guest to go here on this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Mr. Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today?
Going well, Adam. How about yourself, sir?
Doing well. Appreciate your time as always. Thank you so much for joining us here. And you know what? Let's go ahead and talk a little bit of NHL. I know I sent over some NFL, talking points for you here. Early season NHL betting approach. What is yours?
Really, you know, I'm kind of actually evaluating that. I did play some futures. A lot of it, you know, I don't know how heavy I'm going to get in the first couple weeks, maybe some spot plays, but, you know, you kind of do want to see these teams a little bit. I mean, I think I have, you know, some of the teams that might have some high expectations, you know, may struggle out of the gate, but I don't think it's necessarily, you know, pushing the panic button on some of the better teams. I mean, you would think in the East, you know, I think Pittsburgh's still a contender. I really like Tampa Bay this year. I think, you know, when you lose your best player, I think they got decimated by injuries and ended up not making the playoffs when I felt that probably at full strength last year, they were one of the three or four better teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, looking at that, I mean, the strong teams, a lot of people are very high on Edmonton this year. And, you know, there's your usual teams, Chicago and San Jose. You know, maybe the year for some dark horses to kind of take a step up, like someone like Calgary or Dallas. Those are kind of a couple longer shots I played on the futures board this year. But, you know, it'll be an interesting to see the start. I think you might see some mediocre to bad teams get off to good starts, and then you'll see some good teams get off to so-so starts.
Well, and what's so challenging is that, you know, there's just so much going on right now with college football and the NFL and Major League Baseball playoffs, and people are getting ready for the NBA as well, which starts in, what, about 3 weeks or so. So it's just hard to be up to date on everything that's going on in the NHL market. And I completely agree with you in the sense of keeping exposure low for the first few games. I mean, see what you've got with these teams, because, you know, there's a lot of timing involved in the NHL. I don't know how closely people watch it, but you know, you got to find line combinations that work. You're playing with a lot of new teammates. You know, there's just a lot going on. There's a lot of roster turnover in the NHL, young players, very young players. I mean, you see 17 and 18 year old kids playing in the NHL on a regular basis, it feels like. So, you know, I agree with your approach that, you know, you keep things light early on in the season. And like you said, maybe look for some of those spot plays early on. And that's really a hallmark of my NHL handicapping to begin with, is I think situational edges, both in the NHL and the NBA, are very, very significant.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm going just on my own experience. Sometimes, you know, the whole thing about this as sports bettors is you got to learn, you know, and you learn from mistakes. And my mistake last year is I kind of went fired out of the gates to start the season and ended up in a hole that, you know, that I was able to, you know, dig most of the way out of. But I really started off poorly personally betting last year. I mean, you know, it's a long-term thing, but sometimes you're going to have bad seasons. And I started out bad personally betting in the NHL season and, you know, probably got a little bit aggressive. So that's why I'm taking a little bit more of a cautious approach.
And, I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing that. You know, I mean, the season is 6 months long. It's 82 games for each team. You're going to have plenty of opportunities if you want to go out there and bet the NHL. I mean, it's not like the NFL or college football where, you know, in college football teams play 13, maybe 14 games on the high end. In the NFL, they play 16, maybe as many as 19 in the playoffs. You know, in the NHL, you've got 82 games. You've got that daily grind. You've got long road trips for these teams. So, yeah, you really don't need to go balls out right out of the gate.
No, not at all. And I think, and it's one of the things, too, as sports bettors, you have to evaluate your strengths. I mean, hockey, I wouldn't consider necessarily one of my stronger sports. I mean, like college basketball, I would consider a lot better, and maybe I can be a little bit more aggressive because I have a more day-to-day knowledge of the teams and of the game that I can get by. But I mean, with NHL, I mean, I really got to put in the work to keep up with these teams. And there's some people that have a natural knack for hockey, so it's really kind of, you know, evaluating your own strengths, in terms of what you decide to maybe get more aggressive in and what you might take a more conservative approach. And there's nothing wrong with taking a conservative approach in certain sports.
Well, and I guess that's the last point we'll talk about here, and we'll get into some NFL stuff, is for those that follow your work on Twitter, you are a high-volume handicapper. I mean, you do golf, you do NASCAR, you do UFC, you do all the major betting markets. I know you do some tennis stuff as well. You pretty much hit on just about everything you can. So how hard is that for you to, you know, have that that willpower and that resistance to not dive in right away?
It is hard. I mean, you have to, be willing to, it's maybe the old adage of listen to everyone but follow no one. But, I mean, you really, I think, have to look at, guys that are maybe stronger in some other sports. And, you know, don't be afraid to kind of see what they're doing and, not necessarily just follow plays, but, you know, look at how they approach things if there's something that you don't have as much of a knowledge of. And, I mean, you can't really – you can know a little about everything but a lot about nothing, basically. And, I mean, there's only a few sports that I think, you know, each day-to-day sports bettor really, really knows. And then there's some where, you know, you may utilize some of your resources or some of your network, if you have a network on social media or if you have friends and colleagues that bet certain sports where, hey, this guy, I might be a better basketball guy, but this guy's a better hockey guy. And, you know, you kind of, you know, maybe work together a little bit or seek each other's counsel. So, that's what I think you know, the key to this, if you're going to bet multiple sports, and there's nothing wrong with specializing necessarily either. I mean, know what your wheelhouse is. I mean, if you're really good in the NFL, concentrate on the NFL. And I mean that, you know, and I'm trying to do a little bit more of that. I mean, there will be times, you know, on it, with NHL where I might not have a play for a few days. And I mean, the fact that, you know, the odds makers got to put the lines and the prices out on every game every night, but you don't necessarily have to bet them every game every night.
All right, I had a listener question with regards to buying points here, and I believe the context of the question was mostly looking at Monday Night Football, so we'll start with a discussion about buying points in the NFL. Is that something you do? Is that something you recommend?
It is something I do from time to time. It varies on the situation. I mean, now with the NFL, because the key numbers are so pronounced, you're going to pay a lot more than traditionally you might on a basketball game because, you know, we've had this conversation before. I think there are sometimes some key numbers on basketball spreads. And, you know, when you're buying points, you know, you're buying, you know, half a point is another 10 cents. So, you know, buying up from 6.5 to 7 in basketball is $1.20. In something like the NFL, where it's more of a key number, you're talking -125, -130, you know, depending on the individual book's exposure or what they have wagered on the game. But, you know, I think the key numbers, I mean, they make you pay for them in the NFL because there are key numbers, you know, with the 3 and the 7. And sometimes if you look at a line screen, you'll see some of these books that'll have like -such-and-such +115 or +120, and a lot of that is teaser protection because, you know, when you hear all these guys that put out maybe, okay, pros versus Joes or, you know, where are we getting the sharp money or where are we getting the public money, keep in mind that's not just straight bets, that's also teasers and parlays, and especially teasers with some of these games. So you definitely have to take that into account.
Well, and of course, for day of the game bettors, that's a question that we had last week or 2 weeks ago, something like that, about some betting tips for day of the game. You know, if you want a particular number on the day of the game, odds are you're going to be able to find it. Now, if you do have, you know, only one sports book at your disposal, maybe you do have to think a little bit more about buying a hook or something like that to get onto a number that you want. But if you've got multiple books, more often than not, you should be able to find the number that you're looking for there. Wes, let's talk about a few of these games here and look at some of these different handicapping angles that we've got for this week. Let's look at the Thursday night game here between New England and Tampa Bay. New England, anywhere from a 5 to a 6 point favorite, the 6 out there at Bovada. That's hardly a big surprise. The 5 at the Chris Books, as well as DSI, 5.5 at Pinnacle and a couple of others. You know, this is a really interesting handicap because New England, a very public team, Thursday night, standalone game. You know where the public money is coming. But at the same time, defensively, they've just looked so bad.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very – I mean, it's not a surprise that New England, you know, was getting the money from the opener of 4.5. But this isn't, you know, necessarily, I think, an easy lay on the road here because, I mean, if you look at the Patriots' defense, they've allowed 1,827 yards through 4 games. 4 straight weeks, they've allowed a 300-plus yard quarterback in all of their games this season. You know, if they were to keep their points pace, they would shatter the modern NFL record. I think it was the Saints back in 2012 where they allowed like over 7,000 yards. The Patriots, I think, would be on a pace for 7,300 yards. And, you know, they're on a short week, so it's tough to get a quick fix. And, you know, Bill Belichick definitely wants to get that fixed. But it's hard to lay that. And this number is interesting because it is in that range. It's not close enough to where it's 6.5 where you would get some people that would buy up to 7 and definitely take Tampa Bay as a home dog. You know, it's kind of in that middle range, but it's in that range where you could see a lot of people trying to tease down the Patriots if they were to get to 6 or even at 5.5, where they could tease that down to they can tease that down to pick them with a game on Sunday. And, I mean, it almost seems like, I don't know if the odds maker is really telling you who he or she likes here, but, you know, it would make me lean to Tampa Bay. The fact that it's not higher, actually, that maybe says that they're comfortable with the Patriots where they are, knowing that they're going to get Patriots money. I mean, could they come out and, I mean, the Patriots are a team, you know, if any team can, I guess, flip a switch, they can, but I think this is hard to get a quick fix here on a short week for that defense. And I think you're going to see the total continue to rise. I think it's pretty much consensus 55, but, you know, it is a primetime game, and primetime games have had a pretty good knack for going over the total in recent years. So I think you're going to see that number likely continue to rise. I haven't decided what I'm this one yet, but if I had to, I'd probably take the Bucks at home.
I think you brought up a really good point, and this is something that I try to stress to listeners out there, is looking for context clues in the line. The books know, like you said, they're getting public involvement on this game, on game day, and it's going to come in on New England. So the fact that they're not already sitting up there at 6 does tell you, like you said, that they're probably pretty comfortable with the number they're at, with the position that they're in. And it also says something to me that this number is not at 6 when everybody and their brother was against Tampa Bay last week. That number with the Giants actually came down to 2.5 at some books. The Giants haven't won a game this season, and they really haven't looked all that good. I know they're in a major market. They've been kind of a public team in the past. But the fact that there was enough steam on that game to bring it down to 3 with reduced juice or 2.5 was a really good sign of what was going on with Tampa Bay in the betting market. And again, the fact that this number is not higher, like you said, I think that the context clues here kind of say that Tampa Bay looks like the side. Now, taking Tampa Bay is obviously not an easy thing to do here against New England, but you know, you want to look for context in the line. I think that is what the line is saying right now.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, keep in mind that Tampa Bay also has the smaller sample size, like Miami, with the Irma canceling the week one game. So they've only had 3 games. So you had them obviously look pretty good against the Bears in their home opener, but the Bears obviously now have made a quarterback change. Tampa did not look good against Minnesota. And then last week, I mean, they really couldn't get away from the Giants. So, you know, is it kind of a thing where, like Seattle last Sunday, where in their first 3 games wasn't really anything that tickled your fancy or made you fall in love with the Seahawks based on the previous performances? You know, that's also a thing here. You wonder if maybe Tampa's sitting on a really good game here after 3 kind of, you know, okay effort, you know, or they weren't great, you know, were either bad or weren't great. So, you know, maybe this is the potential good game that they could be sitting on here.
Well, and again, I mean, that game against Chicago turned the ball over on their own side of the 50 4 times. I think one of those, or maybe 2 of those, was returned for a touchdown. So it's not like Tampa Bay offensively did a ton in that game. They won the turnover battle, and, well, really, Chicago lost the turnover battle, and then that was that game. Also in this game, another thing that makes it interesting that the line isn't higher, Lavonte David out for Tampa Bay, Quan Alexander probably not going to play either. Those are 2 significant losses in the middle of this defense. Tampa Bay also probably missing 2 safeties, TJ Ward being one of them. 4 key injuries in the back 7 for Tampa Bay, going up against a New England offense that's been as efficient, as proficient as it always is, and yet this number still hasn't gone up to 6 or 7. So, again, just another example there of why it's so important to look at every possible angle in a game.
Yeah, and you've also got the New England offense is still very good, but you've got clearly the loss of Edelman, but they're obviously using Hogan, and he's filled in nicely, and I think they're still trying to figure out how to use maybe some guys. Dwayne Allen, who of course was with the Colts. And I think they used Dwayne more as a blocker, because, I mean, when you've got Gronk, I mean, you don't really need to throw a ton of balls Dwayne Allen's way, but you know, you have Dwayne Allen and Philip Dorsett, both former Colts. I mean, they're still trying to, I think, incorporate some different people in the offense. And, you know, Brady's modus operandi is to really spread that ball around, and you'll have several receivers with a catch. And, you know, particularly not with your typical go-to, you know, X wide receiver. So, you know, they're still trying to figure things out, not worried about them offensively, but just their defense. And I think this total is going to likely continue to rise. I wouldn't be shocked if it was 56.5, 57 by tomorrow.
Yeah, New England also working Brandon Cooks in, who's another new guy. So, you know, again, I mean, I know we've spent a lot of time on this game, but it is such a fascinating handicap for a lot of different reasons. And we've outlined really the only negative we've outlined for New England at this point is their defense. And this number still hasn't climbed up all that much. It's still in that dead zone between 4 and 6 where sharp money could swing the balance either way. So definitely a very interesting one to watch. And as I'm looking at the odds screen here, I know I didn't mention this game to you, but I do want to touch on it now that I'm looking at it. Is game 453-454, Buffalo and Cincinnati. Saw Cincinnati firsthand. I went to that Browns-Bengals game on Sunday. Two takeaways. One, the Bengals aren't as bad as they played. Two, the Browns are pretty much as bad as they've played. Now, in this situation, you've got Cincinnati, favorite at home. This is a Buffalo team. It's 3-1, but it hasn't been the sexiest 3-1. So I kind of wonder how much respect the Bills have gotten for their body of work so far, and this line may be a little bit of an indication.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you got to look at here is you got two pretty good defenses. I mean, when you think of really good defenses in the NFL, I mean, you think of Denver or you think of Baltimore, you know, the usual suspects that are kind of, you know, near the tops most years on defense. But these two defenses are very good. And you've seen with Cincinnati, you know, they held, granted it was Watson's first road start, but they held Houston to 13, and then Houston goes up and puts up 30-plus in New England. And then obviously, you know, the game kind of got out of hand, so the score's misleading. But they did score 57 points. Some of it was off the defense, but the offense looked pretty good last Sunday for Houston, and Cincinnati was able to hold them down. Buffalo was able to hold Atlanta to 17, who had a couple straight 30-plus point games. So you've got two really good defenses here, and I think the total really is indicating that with it being 39 and even in some places being 38.5. So, I mean, I don't think that the under would be the wrong look here necessarily. If I had to pick the side, I might lean with Cincinnati because I do think that they're a little bit on the upswing. I don't know if maybe Buffalo, they're not a fraudulent 3-1 because their defense has been good, but their offense still hasn't really broken out. And I don't know if this is the defense where it really breaks out again. So Cincinnati would be my lean on the side.
Yeah, I look at that line and I kind of think to myself, I mean, look, it makes sense to me that these two teams are lined fairly evenly. And I mean, I don't think Cincinnati's got a 2.5 or a 3-point home field, maybe 2 points. So when you look at the line that came out with 2.5, a little bit of extra juice on the Bengals, I think that was a pretty good number. And it doesn't take much to nudge a 2.5 minus 15 up to 3. And some shops, of course, just went ahead and opened 3 right away on this game. So, you know, I just kind of look at the line and I'm sort of trying to think to myself, you know, you mentioned Cincinnati possibly being on an upswing, played well against Green Bay, at least in the first half, fell apart in the second half, but covered the number, beat the Browns comfortably last week. You know, is this a Cincinnati team that has a reputation for being very good in the regular season? Is this a team where maybe a little bit of recency bias and perception bias is hitting the board?
You know, I think it could. I think it could be because I think that these teams are pretty equal, actually, even though the records don't indicate that. You know, Buffalo was able to get a bad Jets team in the first week and then, you know, went to Carolina, only scored 3 points. But, you know, pretty much shut them down and stayed, you know, within the number the whole game. And then, of course, getting Denver off that big win over Dallas in Buffalo really held Denver down and pressured Trevor Siemian. And Buffalo is probably one of the best teams in the league at getting pressure with their front four. You know, they're not a team that necessarily has to use a lot of exotic blitzing to get pressure on the opposing quarterback. And, you know, sometimes you worry about Dalton. Dalton is a guy when he's pressured, like a lot of quarterbacks, that he'll give the ball away to you. So, you know, this is a pretty tough game. I think the number probably is right here, you know, because they're basically saying with this home field that, you know, this is a pick'em game and these two teams are pretty dead even. And I think that they are, despite the reverse records of 3-1 against 1-3.
All right, we'll stay with the AFC North home team here. We'll go to game 457, 458 on the board. Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is an 8.5-point favorite in this spot. I'm going to be very interested in seeing what happens with the line for this game because Pittsburgh, obviously a very public team, lots of skill players that everybody knows from their fantasy team. Jacksonville, you know, it's just been so up and down, so inconsistent for them. I think a lot of people are going to be under the impression that this number is a little bit high, but situationally, Jacksonville playing a third straight road game with that one in London against Baltimore, played effectively five quarters last week with a late overtime game against the Jets. This is not a good spot for the Jags at all.
Yeah, it's kind of like when I was looking at this, I was like, it's a bad spot for Pittsburgh off a pretty convincing divisional road win. Where they're now 2-0 against the division in the AFC North, and then you look at they come home. It is kind of a line that looks high. Like, you know, you kind of want to take the dog, and then Pittsburgh, of course, goes on the road next week against the main national afternoon game at Kansas City, who may very well be undefeated still. I mean, you know, they could lose to Houston, but I mean, you know, the team that I think everybody considers, at least today, the best team in the NFL. So they have that coming at them. So they probably will have a chip on their shoulder and a point to prove there. But bad spot for Pittsburgh, horrible spot for Jacksonville to go to London and then have to go to New York and then have to go back on the road to Pittsburgh. Have not been, you know, three straight road games, and they get three straight home games in December to kind of make up for that. But you know, it's got to be a pretty road-weary team. And playing the five quarters, essentially, like you said, in New York last week, I mean, in terms of the number is telling you maybe, you know, maybe there's value in Jacksonville, but boy, this is a tough game for me, and I don't know what I'm going to do with this game, if anything, because I'm not in love necessarily with laying Pittsburgh at the 8.5, but that the Jacksonville, that's got to be one of the worst spots you can get with the three straight road games. So, you know, this is a very tough call for me.
Well, and what I think is so interesting is, you know, Jacksonville is effectively a home team in London. So, you know, that win over Baltimore is, it felt like a home game for them, but still, I mean, they dominated Baltimore, like historic dominance of that Baltimore offense. And people start looking at Jacksonville and saying, okay, you know, because Jacksonville's been that trendy, oh, I want to love them coming into the season type of team for, what, probably 5-6 years now with the talent they bring in with the draft and some of the free agent signings that they make and things like that. And it just winds up never working out. Then they go to 2-1. They blow out Baltimore on the road. They beat the Texans in week one, you know, very comfortably. And people were kind of saying, okay, maybe this is the Jacksonville team that, you know, we've been waiting on. Then last week they lose to the Jets, who coming into the season, people were talking about the Jets going 0-16, being one of the worst teams ever in the NFL. Well, the perception swings for this Jacksonville team through 4 weeks of the season are just astounding.
Yeah, and the fact that you look at this Jets team and they look like they're getting a lot of public money. I mean, because they're playing Cleveland. I actually, you know, like Cleveland in that game. We don't have to go into the detail, but I will likely be on them there because I think people need to hold their horses a little bit on the Jets. But, Jacksonville, you look at the talent on the defense. I mean, the fact that they've drafted so high in the draft and the fact that now they've got a lot of these guys healthy finally at the same time with Dante Fowler Jr. and Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey and all these high picks that they've had. Now they're all of a sudden playing, and you saw them in week one against Houston. Granted, you know, Tom Savage wasn't effective at quarterback, but the fact that they got so much pressure from that front four when you incorporate Malik Jackson, the veteran that they got from that great Denver defense a couple years ago. So, I mean, they're really getting after these quarterbacks, and, you know, they can put pressure on just about anybody. But, I mean, it's tough because I think they're trying to learn, you know, how to win, and I think they're in a division where there's no real great team. You know, Tennessee would look like the best team, but now they lose Mariota for a little bit. The Colts, you know, look like they're a dead team, but they could potentially maybe win a couple in a row if and when Andrew Luck gets back. So, I mean, it's the nature of being in the AFC South. I mean, it's a very ugly division, and there's not much that separates these teams. So, you know, but when you've had a team historically in the bottom like Jacksonville, that, you know, there's a little bit of time that it takes to learn how to win.
Well, and what's really difficult, I know you're in the Super Contest as well, and this is the first week that we've got bye weeks. We've got four teams on a bye, so that takes two games off the schedule. New England and Tampa Bay, you're probably not going to play that one because it's a Thursday nighter. Then you have to have your full card in. So all of a sudden now, you're down to picking five of the 13 games. And when you start looking at a game like that Buffalo-Cincinnati game, like the Chargers-Giants we talked about in the previous segment, Jets and Browns, Jaguars and Steelers, you know, if you're starting to cross some of these games off, all of a sudden you find yourself having to pick five out of the nine, five out of the 10, five out of the 11 games. And this is where it gets really, really challenging. And this is something I'm sure I'll talk about later in the week in the Super Contest segment as well. But while we're talking about it, I guess we can get your thoughts here on it too, Wes, is that, you know, you got to pick five games. And at some point you can't keep crossing off these NFL games.
And there are so many games this week that, you know, with even whether they're professional bettors or whether they're casual bettors, you know, you got a matchup with 2-0-4 teams. I mean, are you really confident taking one of those teams maybe necessarily in your five in the Super Contest? And then you have the Jets and Cleveland. Well, Cleveland I know is awful, but do I really want to take the Jets? And then Tennessee-Miami clearly still off the board with the Mariota thing, so... And then you have another matchup of teams with, you know, bad records with the 49ers and Indianapolis. Those are two teams that aren't exactly inspiring you. And so many of these games have very close lines here. I mean, you have Green Bay and Dallas, two public teams, playing each other this week with a line under three. You have Seattle and the Rams, and Seattle – you know, kind of in that second half looked like that vintage Seattle. And then all of a sudden now you've got the Rams having believers going to Dallas, and the fact that their offense is putting up huge numbers. I mean, we've seen a light years improvement with Jared Goff's play this year. So, you know, this is probably one of the toughest weeks I've seen because it is tough to find five that you can feel really confident in. And it may be, you can only have three that you're confident in, and then you just got to take your chances on something. I mean, I probably couldn't give you five today that I could say, okay, this is what I'm going to play. I mean, me personally, I think a lot of other people are kind of figuring that out as well and in the same boat.
Oh, yeah. There's no way. I mean, Cam Newton and Carolina taking money on the road at Detroit, that's a surprising line move to me. Oakland up to a 2.5 or 3-point favorite with E.J. Manuel at quarterback. I mean, that's been a one-sided line move there against Baltimore. Minnesota-Chicago for Monday night, still off the board. You don't know if you're getting Bradford. You don't know if you're getting Keenum. You know what the hell you're going to get from Mitch Trubisky. It's a brutal week for the NFL, and especially when you have to make five plays. If you're just out there betting and you want to bet two or three games, cool, go for it. But when you have to pick five of them, man, there's so many questions on the board here this week. I know I'm certainly not looking forward to narrowing down this card, but I haven't liked the last two cards. I've gone 8-2 in the last 2 weeks. So I don't know, maybe that'll be on my side a little bit. But then you get to this Sunday night game as well. Kansas City, I mean, they've been virtually infallible. They've been a very, very good team here so far this season. Now, they got fortunate to cover last week against Washington, but, you know, still played a really solid game. They're on the road Sunday night football to take on the upstart Houston Texans, who look much better with Deshaun Watson at quarterback. Will Fuller's now back in the fold as well, so they've got another weapon offensively. Kansas City, small chalk or a pick 'em with extra juice out there, but it's tough to feel confident about this game too.
Yeah, and if you look, it was really weird on Monday night because Kansas City did outplay Washington. They were the better team, but they shouldn't have covered the game because they were never really covering the game, and there was probably a doubt whether they really should have won the game, even though they were the better team, because you know, Washington's got a touchdown, you know, with 50 seconds to go, and it's not completed and dropped in the end zone. And I mean, if you have that, then you have Kansas City having to drive the field just to get a touchdown and being down four. So it was a really weird game, but it didn't make me look down upon Kansas City as a team because, I mean, they did control the ball. They did get bailed out on some third down penalties, which I thought really ended up devastating Washington. I think they had five penalties on third down where they got a stop, but Kansas City was able to continue the drive with the penalties. You know, Houston, what do you make? I mean, you're really having to buy high here on Houston with them, you know, putting up 57 points on Tennessee and really dominating on both sides of the ball. And I think most people looked at Tennessee as the best team in the AFC South of those four teams, that they were probably the one that had the fewest amount of weaknesses, at least. This is also a tough call for me because, I mean, as a team keeps winning, more people kind of get on the bandwagon here, and eventually you wonder when that's going to tip over, because I think Kansas City's good, but I don't think that there's a team in the league that's a clear, great team. You know, I think every team in the league has flaws. I think Kansas City, you know, could also be one, and a lot of times they would point to the off quarterback play, but, you know, I think they're usually solid defense, you know, can be had in certain spots. I mean, you kind of saw on that last drive last week with Kirk Cousins, who I thought that was a fantastic drive to lead them out there, and, you know, Kirk was able to scramble, and Kirk's a better athlete than I think people give him credit for, but, you know, certainly you think if Kirk Cousins can do that and make some plays and can continue drives against that defense, that you would certainly think Deshaun Watson could definitely do that with his feet as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are, again, so many angles to this game and so many things to look at. And, you know, if you're Kansas City, I mean, we talk about the parity generally in the NFL, and I know people hate to use that word, but you know, how long can they keep this thing rolling? How long can they stay with that flawless record? I mean, not to say that I'm going to fade them just because they have a perfect record so far, but you know, it's hard to win every week in the NFL. And now you're on a short week going from Monday night to Sunday night, and you know, you're going out on the road to do it. And, you know, it's just, man, this week in the NFL is definitely one of the most difficult that I can remember on quite some time. And, you know, from the looks of it too, I think when you get a lot of these low numbers, I think it's one of those things where the odds makers are kind of looking at it and saying, okay, we're going to put up a number, but we'd like to see where we have to go, because I don't think that they're, you know, too strong in their positions right now either.
I don't think so either. And I mean, that this is where I kind of go back, and we had this discussion before with certain derivative betting. I mean, you know, be sure to kind of look if you're not sure. I mean, it's tough to beat the NFL, you know, for a 60-minute game. I mean, it is tough. You have freaky things that'll happen, like on Monday night, where you've got, you know, maybe not the better team, but you've got the right side, and it's worked out perfectly if you have the Redskins, and then all of a sudden that happens. I mean, you know, that's not going to happen every game, but I mean, you know, you've got some things that do kind of happen in the NFL, so where, you know, maybe if you're finding it tough to beat the 60 minutes, try to beat the half, try to beat the 30-minute game, or try to beat quarters, you know, look at second half plays, you know, say, you know what, I don't, it's a game I don't want to be involved with, but all of a sudden game flow changes things, and then maybe you get involved on a Sunday for the second half. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of teaser games out there this week too. If you look at some of these numbers, you know, I could definitely see Green Bay getting a lot of teaser support where you could tease them up through the 3 and the 7. Houston as a home dog, that would be doable. Seattle, I could see getting teased up. Carolina, I could see getting teased up. Philadelphia, I could see getting teased down through at least the 3 and down to pick 'em with the West Coast team coming back. So you've got, I mean, almost every single game on the board teasable around key numbers. So, you know, I think that that's a thing where that might give an indication to some of the bookmakers of, you know, where the real money is going to be in terms of let's see where these folks are going to tease these games too, and not necessarily just on straight bets and parlays.
Well, certainly a lot of things to watch here. And, of course, the NHL season tonight adds another wrinkle to everything that's going on. So great segment today, Wes. I think we shed some light on a lot of different good things. And if people are interested in what you have to say and what you play each day, they can find that out over at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. And I certainly recommend that people do follow you. So, Wes, thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam. Always a pleasure, buddy.
Great stuff there with Wes Reynolds. Great stuff on today's show overall. Brian Leonard joining us here in the first part of today's show. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll have Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Also, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. Myself and Colin Wilson, we're going to record that here tonight. I will probably echo some of those same thoughts that you just heard with Wes. I don't know how strong my card will be, but with the Indians game coming up on Thursday night, need to record a day earlier. So, you know, I'll shed some light on some games that I am looking at. We'll talk probably about a lot of the different games because I don't think Colin will have much of his cards squared away yet either. So we'll probably just touch on some general thoughts, and then I'll look at some of the games I do like a little bit more than others. But then also the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook, that you'll hear that as well on Friday's show. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.